Yeah, just to clarify, is the midos thing is that if you see if you, let's say a guy is a midah, let's say that's the midah, right? That's what I'm explaining. Yeah, the midah thing is why is the difference is that if it's tshuva me'ava you get overcome the midos, but in tshuva me'ara it doesn't work. So you said because see in tshuva me'ava basically, or let's say in tshuva me'ara it's that you have the you don't remove the emotion, it's basically slow the emotion, but it's just that you see the consequence. It is not worth it. So you have a different consequence, a different emotion, or a different desire, which is stronger than the underlying vera. And therefore, you see that my best interest, I'm not going to follow it. So you still have the in your nature. You haven't like removed your psyche, or that component of your psyche which is drawn to the chayit. It's just that you've shown that you should be more drawn to something else. And it's not worth it. It's not worth doing that. It's not worth going with that. But you still have that part of your nature. So if it's a midah, you can't remove the part of your nature. It's just that you're not going to act on it. Because acting on it is going to have a consequence. But you're not going to be able to undermine the feeling because you're not attacking the feeling directly. But in the case of Tshuva Me'ava, you're saying is the whole world of feelings is a small world. It's based upon my own personal instincts. But my mind is drawn to a different reality or the world of truth. And the world of my emotions pales in comparison to that. So I'm simply, my energy is not directed towards the whole area. So it's directed towards a different area. So therefore I could simply, my energy in the gaiva or in whatever emotion it is just going to be removed. And remove myself from the whole area. But in the other case, you can remove it, it's just that you're not going to act on it because there's a strong, it's like a counterforce. This isn't a counterforce, it just becomes nothing. When you do me'ava, that's nothing. Your MS, the West Sheker, that's nothing. But in the other case, in the Yira, it's not that it's nothing, it's just there's a strong counterforce. But that force still exists, and therefore you're not going to be able to remove it. Whew. Okay, so now I guess we have to figure out. So what's the Gemara say? Gemara says that if you do tshuva me'ava, then your sins turn into merits. Your willful sins turn into merits. Tshuva me'ira, your willful sins turn into unwillful sins. Okay. So I guess we have to start with one of them. Which one should we start with first? Right. It's the same question. Right. So what does it even mean to change altogether is a good question. But that's part of the same question. I mean, what is it? But I mean, I think the way we would do that, I don't think you could just try to answer that in the abstract theoretical sense. You might as well take one of them and see if we can understand it in that case. You know what I mean? Like, otherwise you're kind of talking very abstract. So just focus on it. But that's a question, right? But it seemed to me the way to do that is to think, to get particular. It might be easier. Yeah, okay. So I'm thinking as follows. I think it's kind of a mix of what all you guys are saying. But we'll talk about it after. But I'm thinking that... let's start with the guy who's me'ava. So the guy who's me'ava. So what happens is that he was previously involved in the sin. Okay, and he had those emotions and he was involved in it, engaged in it. Now, when he then decides to ignore them, so I think that he. The fact that he was involved in that chayit, he would have like more insight into his psyche, into his instincts, than another guy who never did it. See, because he's been involved in the area and his instincts were engaged. So when as part of the perfection that a person gains is he understands the shallowness of his instincts of the chayit, and he understands. Now that's not true and it's false. And the more insight he has about his psyche and about those forces, then he negates that. He sees how the mistaken nature of them, and he grabs hold of the truth. The more he's grabbed onto, the more he's attached to the truth, because he sees through the insight into the nature of the instincts and analyzing them and seeing that they're false. So then he's. He has a greater hold on the truth. The more he's, if he understands the nature of where the instinct comes from, and he could study it, so then he could negate it. He understands it better, and he sees its nature and its source and its it's how it's baseless, and he could his attachment to truth, he has a greater understanding of why that is false and why the truth is true. But a guy who doesn't have insight into his instinct, so he will be he may know that it stems from an irrational source, but and so as he doesn't have insight, he'll be less removed from it. In other words, he could attach himself to truth, but he won't have the same insight to understand how it's false and understand its corruption in the same way. So the guy who actually sinned, he did involve himself in the sin, and his instincts were aroused, were engaged, and now he has more ability to look back on them, and he has more opportunities for insight. So the sins themselves actually become merits, because the sin itself is now a source of knowledge for him. As opposed to a guy who didn't sin and didn't conquer that. It's like he's kovish his yetzer, means he understood, his instinct was engaged, and he was able to conquer it with knowledge. So he has a further conquest of his nature.
So is the thing a merit? Is it that,
Right. It means is that the tshuva is so great that the thing which, the fact that he sinned previously was a fault to him, and it was an X on his perfection. Now the fact that he sinned is really helpful to him, is really meritorious to him. Through tshuva, he converted that which was a blemish for him into something which is positive for him. Looking back, so to speak, he's fortunate that he sinned in a certain sense, because he has more knowledge now that he sinned than he wouldn't have had that he sinned. He could think back, so to speak, the sinner could think back and remember the sin through his memory. He'd remember his state of mind at the time, and he could study himself, and he could learn about his psyche and see how irrational he was being at the time and how blinded he was, and he could actually gain insight into his psyche based upon seeing how irrational he was and how all the different kind of played out. So a guy who never sinned, his access to his psyche and to those forces is less, because he doesn't have like a case to study. So there's a certain type of an insight which he has access to, which he wouldn't have, he's not able to have otherwise. It would be like if a guy represses all of his emotions. So now he's not going to be able to learn them and overcome them. It's just he thinks he doesn't have any emotions. That's not perfection. Perfection is the degree to which you see the instinct and conquer it and realize it's just shortcomings. So a guy who represses it, he never has access to his instincts. So he's never been able to overcome them. He's just managed to ignore them. But that's not perfection. Perfection is with knowledge you see their failings. So the more insight you can gain into it, into your psyche, into your nature, and see its mistakes, so the better, the more perfected, the more attached to knowledge you'll be. Well, his instinct is. Right? It's like in certain sense, he'll understand, he'll be able to see clearly how irrational his instinct is. Because he'll see how it led him to do such stupid things. So he'll have an insight into its strength and into its nature, and he'll be able to see its mistakes. And he'll be able to overcome it differently. He'll have a different grasp on the truth of reality and the falsehood of his instinct. Whereas a guy who never did it, he may not fully perceive the nature of his instinct. I think Chazal say that when in Olam Haba, the tzaddikim will look and be amazed at how strong the instincts are. So they'll gain a certain knowledge of this power of the instinctual force.
Right.
Well, I think he's saying anyways man is limited in his ability to know, understand the depths of his nature. Even if he is a sinner, it could be still in that nature, that knowledge is could be removed from a person. I remember Rebbe had a shiur, actually. He talked about the Chazal, which says that they're davin to Hashem to remove the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, the instinct for Avodah Zarah. And he did. And what he said is, and they said, the Chazal says, that they daven to Hashem is that we understand something like we understand that we get schar, we get reward for overcoming the instinct, but we don't want it or its reward. Like we can't handle it. So it's like, and he basically said is like the instincts were in a very strong, the instinct for Vodzaro was like very unrepressed in a certain sense. It was like very open and explicit, it's powerful and it's full strength. And that's good and bad for you. It's bad because it's easier to fall to it. But it's good because if you overcome it, then you get a greater schar, you get greater insight into your nature and into your personality and a greater hold on truth. But they said basically we can't handle it and we need help. And the help was is that the instinct became like a certain type of repressed. It took on like a more repressed form and therefore it's not as gross. And you have more of a help, psychological help. The instinct isn't as primitive. Now in doing so, it's easier to control, but they gave up a schar, because there's a certain schar, a reward, that you from understanding your psyche and from overcoming it.
He had it to
Lost in the
Blue, I think.
Lost in the Blue? Maybe I don't remember
that.
Yeah, I don't remember that. But it was an interesting shir. It's interesting. It's like an ava, and it's like tshuva and ava. He's seeing truth versus falsehood in tshuva and ava, true versus false. In yira, he's saying like happiness versus unhappiness. It's not true versus false. It's like consequences, good consequences versus bad consequences. They involve. There's overlap,
yeah, yeah.
But essentially, the study of ava is a guy who's gaining knowledge of truth and reality, whereas about the universe, not so even about himself, just about truth in the world. And the guy who's a yira, he's truth and reality about his own happiness, about his psyche and about his nature and what's going to make him happier. It's not about ultimate reality. It's a different level. It's a different sphere of functioning. The tshuva me'ava. And it turns out, so the tshuva me'ava guy, it turns out that he benefits from those things. He actually benefits from those things. Like, yeah, like what David said, it's true. It's like, in a certain funny sense, he'd say, I wish I would have sinned. You know, you can't actually do it, because doing it will... Maybe not going to do tshuva or whatever, but it's actually about. That's what it sounds like, as I was saying. They actually turn into merits. It means he actually is. They're advantages to him. Those sins are actually good for him. And they are, because they're sources of knowledge. They actually. The experiences themselves are learning experiences. And what about Yira? So, what are this? So the Yira guy. So, I think what you guys are saying is good. That in Yira, similar. The Yira guy. So he basically, it's like economics of the psyche. It's like he sees that he still is attached to the desire, but he sees that he has other desires which say that it's not worth it. This desire isn't worth it. As you want to be happy, this will give you some momentary pleasure, but following the Torah will give you a long-term pleasure, a long-term happiness, so it's just not worth it. But he still is, he doesn't see why the desire itself is false. He still has the desire, and he's still drawn to it. It's just that it's overpowered quantitatively by his other instincts or his other part of his nature. So that type of guy, for instance, would be a guy who would do a shogeg. Why? See, because a shogeg means is like he really still wants the thing. You know what I mean? It's just that it's not worth it. You know what I mean? He sees that it's not worth it. But like that part of him which is still wanting it. Could slip, could manage, like it could cause him to make an error, to err. And he's never going to consciously choose to do the thing because he sees it's not worth it. But he could, because he still has that part of his nature, that unruly part of his nature, he could still end up slipping and falling prey to it in a moment where he's not thinking. See, because it takes thought. When he thinks it through, he has the idea that it's not worth it. But that's a thought process. The shogeg is in a mental lapse, that will force its way through. Yeah, it's going to come from somewhere. It's going to come from the fact that he's still doubting. He doesn't see that it's stupid. He doesn't see that it's wrong and it's false. It's just that he sees that there's a counterforce. So that's good. As long as he's thinking and he has to make a judgment, he'll judge and he'll decide to do it, not do the sin. But if he slips, then he's still a guy who is attached to it. He's like a shogeg guy. He's not a mazid. A mazid guy is a guy who decides and purposely judges, decides, I'm going to do this thing. It's worth it. He's not that guy. He would never purposely decide that. And he's not the amazed guy. The amazed guy, the personality of the amazed, is the guy who holds that the sin is worth it, that the sin is good. He doesn't do that. He doesn't hold that. He holds that it's not good, but he still has a part of him which is attached to it, and therefore he's like a shogeg. That's the personality of a shogeg. A shogeg is a guy who knows that the is true and that it's good, but is still an unruly part of his nature, which sometimes manages to poke its way through. So that's what it means. It's like it's not... See, he's not going to gain the benefit of the knowledge like another guy that the Oven Malva gets. It doesn't turn into a merit because he doesn't understand why it's corrupt and why it's false. He just He doesn't understand why it's bad, why the desire is false. He just knows it's just not worth it. Psychologically, it's not worth it. It's not worth doing it. But he doesn't have insight from the chait because he doesn't understand why the desire itself is false. He just sees that it's not worth it. So it's not going to turn. What makes it turn into a merit is where he gains insight about the thing itself. This guy doesn't have insight about the thing itself. It's just that he's managed to cause a change in the dynamics of his psyche such that it's shifted the other way because there's stronger counterforces. But these forces still exist. He has never overcome it. It's still there, and therefore he still would slip. He'd still be a shogeg. So the type of guy he is now is a shogeg guy. So it means it becomes like a shogeg. Becomes like a shogeg, which means that now that's how he relates to those things now, is the mentality of a shogeg.
Substantial
marshal. And the other guy, he really is the mentality of a guy is as if it's merits to him. You know, I do think though there's another facet to this, which is that even if he does, he still did sin. And he still did it. And I think we'll get to this.
The above.
And I think maybe that will get to the kapara idea, which is that it's not so simple just because you change, then that's it. Everything's a clean slate. Because you sinned and you violated the Torah. And we'll have to talk about this, but it's not so. I think that involves why you need kapara, and it could be like there is an idea that it's God's rachamim that He considers it. That since now you relate to it as a merit or as a shogeg, so God considers it that way, because He doesn't hold it against you. He treats you like you are now, and not like you are then. I mean, we have to talk about it. I mean, in a certain sense, you say, "Well, why should He treat you?" But on the other hand. That's what we have to talk about. And that gets us to the last point here, is that other question is, what does it mean? We still haven't explained. What does it mean that, you know, when it's out of Yura, then you have this whole kapara, which takes time, versus when it's out of Ava, it's instantaneous. Right, what's that? We have to explain exactly why that is. And I still haven't told you Rebbe's idea about the difference between those two. Rebbe's answer to this. He didn't say this Ava and Yura thing. He said a different idea, but he may touch on this. So maybe let's consider that. Is what's the whole idea that you need that it takes time? The kapara thing. That's a good thing to think about. Like, what's that distinction, you know? And, yeah.
When someone talks about